The next witness is Scott Mayer. Mr. Mayer, wait just a moment.
Scott Mayer, is it?
Yes, sir.
Mr. Mayer, are you appearing here today and testifying under oath voluntarily?
Yes, I am.
Have you been paid by anyone for your testimony other than expenses for coming to Clearwater?
Not at all.
You have a lawsuit against the Church of Scientology?
No.
Does the Church of Scientology have a lawsuit against you?
Yes.
Has anyone suggested to you that you should state anything but the truth, or has anyone suggested that you change your testimony for any reason?
Not at all.
Okay. Would you like to make a statement?
Yes, I would. I find it a little bit difficult to distill 12 years of experience with the church, and I was a senior executive with the church for approximately 7 of those years, so to distill all of that information into a small period of time here is kind of difficult. So I prepared an outline of things that I would like to touch on and in kind of a rapid sequence, and after that's through, I'm willing to answer questions about any of the areas I touch on, if that's agreeable to you.
Yes, sir. Why don't you just follow your outline, and then we can ask you questions when you complete your outline.
I basically just wanted to let you know what I'm doing now. I work on an on-call basis as a legal assistant and administrative assistant for the City of Santa Monica in the City Attorney's Office and the Environmental Services area. And I work for also as a consultant to the Internal Revenue Service with the current U.S. tax case. It's been going on for some time, and worked with the senior counselor for the IRS during that tax case as a consultant. The tax case I'm referring to is the time period of 68 through 71 in the U.S. tax court. Judge Sterrett
was my name. The Internal Revenue Service. As a result of
having a ship's master training program being offered to me at one time during the Vietnam War, I was on a navigation team for the flagship of the 7th Fleet and used to run aircraft carriers in and out of various harbors around the world, so I had quite a bit of ship experience when I was first exposed to Scientology, and I was offered a training program that would get me a full master's certificate, and I went in on that basis, that and an educational program. What I want to do real quickly here is just give you some sort of a background of what I did, because I went all over the world for the church for a long time, and I'm basically a troubleshooting basis. And the main point that I think I really want to stress here, bring out from an insider's point of view, is the overall administrative structure of the church, because a great deal of publicity has been put out that your individual churches are corporate bodies unto themselves with their own board of directors, and many of the boards of directors around the planet that they publicize, I worked with those directors, and they were just common everyday staff members assigned papers when it was necessary. So I want to kind of go over the post areas that I held my job so that you can see what kind of a background I had, and it'll probably make it a little easier for you to ask direct questions later. I have been at one time or another everything from a bodyguard to the now deceased Quentin Hubbard to the fleet captain for the Hubbard's fleet of ships on the West Coast. I was an executive troubleshooter for top management of the church. I went on a few missions out of Clearwater under the control of the church of Scientology as an administrative director. in other words, as a command team, the basic command organization for the entire Church of Scientology, when I left in 1966, was situated right here. And was situated here in Clearwater and had been on the flagship Apollo. I was the ship's manager just prior to the move here, and part of my job was getting the ship ready to come in here. I did approximately 18 successful missions for the senior top management of the church all over the world, including South Africa, Scotland, Manchester, St. Hill in England. I've worked with Guardian's office staff members. I worked with Jane Kimber, and I worked with Mo Budlong. Did an intelligence mission in Scotland for the church while I was there. Well, Jane Kimber was the Guardian for the Church of Scientology, the head of the Guardian's office below Mary Sue Hubbard. Mary Sue Hubbard was Commodore's staff guardian, which Commodore's staff were the assistants to the Commodore, to Ron, in each of the divisional areas of the church: finance, dissemination, public relations. Ron had a staff member, a Commodore's staff, for each one of those areas. Here in Clearwater, they did evaluations on a weekly basis for the entire worldwide network of the church. And on the basis of the financial well-being of various organizations around the world, missions, people who were top management trained would go out to various organizations to jack the income back up because it was down. And your whole control or command information center for those evaluations sat here in Tampa after the ship came in here and the flag was moved into the Fort Harrison Hotel. So that's just a little kind of a background of the type of thing I did. I acted primarily as a troubleshooter when things would go wrong. I'd be sent out to make them go right. The reason I left Scientology, by the way, was because of the things that I saw and participated in through my tenure with the church. It got to the point where I could no longer, in my own mind, justify what the church's policy for handling government agencies and society was allegedly there to save. I could no longer reconcile that with the stated aims of the church. So I resigned from the C organization while on a leave of absence in 1976 and was subsequently expelled from the church. Part of the reason I wanted to come down here was that I had talked to Martin Cohn, who's the senior counselor for the IRS in the tax case, about a week or so ago, and I asked him if there was anything that I could do for them while I was down here in terms of bringing back information. And one of the things that he said to me is, he said, Scott, we've been a year at this now, and I'm still on an on-call basis with them as consultant. He said, if I had realized what you were trying to tell me a year ago, we could have taken a whole different tack with this case. And what I have observed, and I have to admit to you that I've stayed pretty well in hiding for the last 3 years. After I had an experience where my car was blown up on Christmas Eve in 1978 in front of a place where the church thought I was staying, but I was living elsewhere. I had planted that information in the church so that I'd know if they were ever trying to contact me. So I stayed pretty much in hiding, and I feel that these hearings are a chance for a little bit of light to come out on this, so that people who are out in the field now, and I know a lot of them, I'm small potatoes compared to what some of the people out in the field have, the things that they've done and experienced. And I would like very much for them to feel free to be able to rejoin society and contribute to it, because that, in essence, was their main concern and reason for going into church in the first place, was to help evolve the planet. There's a tendency to kind of group Scientologists together in terms of the reflection that top management has presented. But the average staff member is nothing more, as far as I'm concerned, than a psychological, psychopolitical dupe. The organization is structured in such a manner that everything is done on a need-to-know basis, much like security in the military. So all and evaluations are done to keep various areas of the church operating on their own goals and purposes without really knowing what's going on in another area. Although there is an incredible grapevine that goes to the Church of Scientology. I had an amusing incident about a week ago where I told a story to someone who was no longer in Scientology at a place in Los Angeles, California, and within a week the story had gone across country through some Scientologists and back through my wife, a friend of my wife's, and back to me, and the person that I talked to could no longer get any information about the church. But it took a week, just person to person, to get the story. And I won't bother with the story, it's a funny anecdote, that's all. Getting back to my original point, I'm basically here today to try to impress you with the magnitude of the operation that you are facing, and I want you to know in no uncertain terms that there is constant evaluation of this hearing going on and all of the things that have happened up to now. And right over here in the Combat Information Center, if that's where they still got it, evaluations are being done on how to handle you. And I would like to see the tables turn for a change, because I don't believe what they're doing is ethical. The points that I would like to cover today are basically violations of clear-cut public policy, such as the registration and operation of maritime vessels, violations of those rules, transportation of funds in and out of the United States illegally, the violation of federal communications regulations on the use of telex and radio communication equipment, transportation of personnel into and out of the country in violation of immigration laws, conspiracy to impede the IRS, the use of cruel and unusual punishment, and an attempt to defraud the United States Postal Service, and I have personal experience with the church in all of those areas. Also, the ill treatment of children and parishioners, living conditions. I've traveled to almost all of the organizations around the world, and Clearwater is just another step in the whole game. In accounting, we talk about the normal course of business and business papers, things that are conducted, that are written out and done standardly pretty much on a day-to-day basis, notes, CPA's notes. Well, the church has a standard operating basis. It has an incredible amount of policy that it can show you to tell you that it's not doing anything, but someone who's really well-trained in their policy, they can show you a policy that makes it be all right. So what you continuously have a facade being put forth to the public about what's church policy, but there is a corollary, a corresponding policy that would make it all right to violate that policy.
Superseding policy?
Yes. Well, it happens to be a crime in the church to impede Scientology. And any staff member would be, you know, severely punished in terms of the organization for impeding the progress, the expansion of Scientology. They're called high crime policies. Fair game policy is part of that, which is allegedly canceled, but I have never found a church official that could show me the policy that canceled it, because it would have to be written by Ron Hubbard and specifically deny that policy, not the little caption that's printed down at the bottom. I printed those captions. I used to be Deputy Pubs Chief U.S. in the early 70s. We put them on all the policy letters, but it didn't cancel anything. And certainly not the way an ethics officer would handle a person who was trying to impede the progress of the church. In terms of the fair game policy itself, I have no way of proving that Scientology blew up my car. I just have the knowledge within myself that that's where I told them I was, and that's where it got blown up. The fact that I didn't live there was to my credit, not theirs. So, in testifying before the U.S. Tax Court the day after my address went on the record, I was sued by the church by my ex-wife, who's, I presume, still in Scientology. The transcript hadn't even been published yet, and they had my name and address and had a little kid come out and serve me the papers. So I was being sued, and I subsequently moved, and I was under IRS protection at the time. Anyway, it was in a state house, so I moved, and I've been moving ever since. They also pulled out my what's called a B1 file during the Scientology hearings, and what it basically is a list of the things that I have done wrong in the past that came out of my confessional folders. I'm kind of getting a little out of sequence here in terms of what I want to talk to you about, but since the point has been brought up, there is a statement by the church that confessional folders are not available to anybody but the auditor or the minister. And I can't tell you the number of folders that I looked at when I was going around various organizations trying to get the income up, because I had to know what was going on with the people in order to get them back in line and get them doing their job. They brought out my B1 file. I didn't even know it was that thick. I was rather flattered. I didn't know that they could get that much stuff out of it. But there were a couple of files sitting right next to me at the in the courtroom that had my name on it. And they didn't have anything else but my confessional folders and my B1 file. The B1 file comes out of the confessional folders. It's a time sequence, a date-time sequence list of all of the things that they feel they can use me. That's a very good point. This was during the second day of the trial in Los Angeles, California, that the file appeared.
Which trial is that?
This was the U.S. Tax Court trial. The approximate time would have been around February of last year. It's been about February of last year. I was about 2 days into it. You have to realize my function during the trial was when the Scientologists would get up on the stand and tell their version of what was going on with the church, whenever they would either directly lie or when they would present a policy letter that was supposed to tell what their policy was on the subject that was being discussed, I would reach over to Mr. Cohen and I would direct him to the policy letter, the definition that opposed that. So I was not very popular with the church's attorney, because we started shooting holes in their story. So the next couple of days after that, my folders arrived, and it was just nothing more than a standard attempt to intimidate me and let me know that they were going to try to make public what was in my confessional folders. Well, I would willingly let any one of you read them now, because there isn't anything that anybody's going to do to me anyway. I did what I did, I've been what I've been, and I've either learned from it or I haven't, so I don't have any secrets that way. But it was an attempt to intimidate.
Is that about when your car was blown up?
No, that was in 1978, and I had been moving around. In addition, several Guardian's office members appeared at friends of mine's houses looking for me during the trial. In fact, the day before I was supposed to appear, I got a telephone call from a Karen Kuiper, who was originally out of the Minneapolis organization and married to Bob Kuiper, also a Guardian's office staff member. She and another girl harassed a friend of mine down in Laguna Beach while they're trying to get in touch with me before I went ahead and testified. The other areas that I would like to cover with you is how Scientology actually operates against the best interest of the community, and possibly touch on some things that I believe would help you in incredible job that you've got of making ordinances out of all of this. So I'd like to get back to the use of various telex equipment, so on and so forth. During the course of my time in Scientology, as a senior executive, I was on call 24 hours a day. I could be on course in Los Angeles and be ordered into briefing because a set of flag mission orders had come in, ordering me to Austin, Texas, or Boston, or Florida, or South Africa. And I'd have about 15 or 20 minutes to get my stuff together and get in a briefing. And incidentally, one of my jobs when I first got into the upper level executive structure was briefing couriers on how to get things in and out of the country. I probably have 100 briefing tapes of people, couriers, that I briefed on how to get through the various immigration, customs officials, postal officials, attempts, to get things out of the country. I have been personally involved with people who have brought money in and out of the United States. My ex-wife and I smuggled $2,000 worth of rand apiece into Clearwater on our last mission from South Africa in 1976.
$2,000 worth of what?
Rand, Kruger rand. Oh. That's the form of currency there. I'm familiar with the fact that it isn't just an accident if some money gets out of the country. It's a regular established procedure. And there's an interesting thing about the procedure too, because on the face of it looks like everyday business activities and students coming in and out and so on and so forth, which is of course exactly what it's supposed to look like. A Scientologist, for instance, in Los Angeles that was going to come to Clearwater to get some training would be taken into the briefing room in Los Angeles and briefed on techniques of getting through various governmental agencies. They would even go so far as to play demos, or they would do play demonstrations of the ways that they were going to do it, what if this happened. And I would grill them on all of the possibilities, all of the things that I thought that they could run into, until I was certain that they could pass a security check, which is nothing more than a lie detector test. And they could go down and they could say that they understood their mission and they knew how to carry it out, and they had no other reason for going to carry their mission out. And this was routine. They were routinely checked on a lie detector to make sure that they actually got what I was trying to tell them, and didn't have any other reasons for doing it. We might send out 12 or 15 people in a week to Clearwater, just to other places earlier where Flag was. I was also, at the time, I covered what was called operations in the United States. I was directly under what was then the Continental Commander for the United States area. I handled external communications, telex transmissions, church management across the United States. On a supervisory level, and data evaluations, organization analysis. I would analyze things that were going on in various churches around the country and devise programs or plans that people could be sent out on to raise the income level of the organization. So I might brief 10 or 12 people a week to go out to Flag, and my external communications chief would have pre-wrapped, using two sets of wrappers. The first wrapper for whatever was going out would have the liaison office address on it for wherever the package was going to go through before it was mailed, before it got to Flag. And the second one would be a phony address and a phony corporate name on it. And at one time, when I first inherited the job, we maintained 5 different phony companies that things were shipped out of Los Angeles to various parts of the world. And all of the packages, as I said, had an outer wrapping and then an inner wrapping, so that when the courier successfully got out of the country, the wrapping could be taken off at the liaison office and then forwarded to the next checkpoint. The after they were, the couriers were briefed by me, they were sent down to finance where they would be given packages to courier flag. None of the couriers, because of the fact that the packages were pre-wrapped, knew who had the loot or who had what. They were all instructed to act as though they were just corporate papers. And that was part of the standard everyday briefing. And people, well, I was briefed on three missions here in Clearwater, and I took documents out of the country. I was sent out as a tourist to South Africa and England and Scotland from Clearwater, and came back here and debriefed, and then went out again. I have to say to you in all frankness that when I stumbled across the little invoice fixing project on flags. I was the ship's manager of the Apollo before it came in here to Florida. The church was doing a little invoice changing project directly underneath our office on the ship, and I got my wife and I sent out on missions because I didn't want to be here when the IRS hit them when they got into Clearwater. So I was probably not quite the perfect Scientologist in that respect, but I just couldn't see how they could get away with it. And as it turns out, they're not, which is great.
I'd just like to make a legal point for the commission here. This background and the relevance and importance of all this testimony is that the allegation in the report and the considerations for the commission are that the goals, purposes, representations, policies of the church are misrepresented to people here in Clearwater as what they're paying for, what the nature of the organization is, and that these policies with regard to what the nature of the organization is are uniform, and therefore important to your consideration is whether there are uniform policies that have been in practice for many years right up to the present time here in Clearwater, which are in direct contradiction to those represented policies as to the nature of the organization for which people are paying millions of dollars for here in Clearwater. So from a legal point of view, all of this testimony is extremely important.